As soon as Luce's going away party wound down enough for me to slip off unnoticed, I went outside and sat on the little wooden bench across from the restaurant. I guess I'd always known she was going to leave, even before that first instant release summer, when she was nothing more to me than a fellow cocktail server, alone and drifting. You could tell she was the kind of person who needed to scrape more out of life than most. But Luce was also someone who liked to drag stuff out as long as possible. So of course, she wanted to give one final hug to every last coworker, from the waiters who always skipped out on their closing duties, to the hosts who made sure to give you all the worst customers until you snuck them a coffee mug of wine. I figured I had time for a cigarette before she came out and caught me. I hadn't smoked in months, but the past couple days had been more stressful than usual, and in a moment of panic, I'd bought a pack off one of the dishwashers. It wasn't my brand, but that didn't matter. Times like this were when all the old urges came swooping back in. I dug around in my bag for my lighter, and though it took a few tries, I got the flame going. Once that first hit of nicotine roared into my bloodstream, it felt like some broken-off part of me finally righted itself and slid into place. By the time Luce came outside, all bundled up in her giant green parka, I'd burned through 3 Marbreds and part of a 4th, and my head was swimming way up above me. She called to me from the door. "He's still not answering. You didn't hear from him, did you?" I dropped my cigarette in the snow before she could see it. "Wilkie?" She ran her eyes over me. "Who else? Said he'd pick us up by 11 at the latest." I hoisted my purse over my shoulder and trudged back toward her. "He's just caught up in his own going away deal. But he's standing on a chair and making a big speech or something. You know how he is." That earned me a faint smile, but you could tell by the stiffness in Luce's jaw that she didn't believe it. She got at her phone and called him again. When Wilkie still didn't answer, her cheeks went splotchy with anger.
"Dude better have a good explanation."
"It's okay. I don't mind walking," I said. Luce and I rented a tiny clapboard bungalow a little less than a mile from the restaurant. Neither of us had a car. Or actually, Luce did. An old Chevy Impala that needed at least $1,000 in repairs before she could drive it, and which was busy decomposing in the side lot next to the skeletal remains of a tractor the previous tenants had wisely abandoned. When the weather was halfway decent, we rode bikes to work. But it had been snowing on and off since morning, so even if we'd been able to make it uphill to Broad Street during daylight, biking back down on slick roads wasn't our idea of a choice evening. Not after the night last winter when Luce hit a patch of ice, tumbled over her handlebars, and fractured her elbow. She lost almost a month of shifts, and even then she had to learn how to carry trays left-handed. At least she had Wilkie. They'd been together over 2 years, and lately he'd been working nights at a nearby bar, the kind with painted-over windows and the stink of urinal cakes wafting out of the bathroom. Although me and Luce always started our shifts a couple hours before him, if it was raining or snowing or we just didn't feel like biking, all we had to do was shoot him a quick text and he'd come give us a lift. Wilkie was a sweet, low-key guy who'd gotten himself bounced out of the army for an incident that wasn't his fault. Not really. Which is to say that in some ways, he was also incredibly dumb. Don't get me wrong. Wilkie had a head packed full of brains and a college education to go along with it. And that's more than you can say for anyone else in our circle, myself included. But at the same time, he was someone who always went around trusting everybody on the planet, no matter how little they might have deserved it.
"Maybe we should check on him,"
Luce said, looking over her shoulder. Wilkie's bar sat way down at the south end of Broad, past even the sketchy 24-hour laundromat and the motel that had been shut down after being declared a public nuisance. Even on the clearest of nights, you could barely make out the neon sign in the distance.
"Forget it. We're not walking anywhere extra. Will you listen to yourself?"
Already, Luce's breath was struggling out of her in soft little wheezes. Her asthma liked to flare up in cold weather.
"Fine,"
she said. We picked our way downhill. The sky had that weird purple color it sometimes took on right before midnight, and every so often you could hear the territorial hiss of a barn owl or the cranky honk of a tree frog. On a nearby mountaintop, The abandoned Anklewood Mill rose out of the fog, like some low-rent haunted castle that was more depressing than scary. As always, I tried not to look. It wasn't until we rounded the bend that a pale blue moon appeared above us like a giant 30, just waiting for someone to reach up and snatch it. A bit freaky, yes, but not surprising. One of the biggest battles you face when you're using is the constant shortage of goodies. And yet the moment you swear them off forever, pills start materializing all around you like some kind of sick joke. The exact same thing had happened a couple nights earlier. Luce and I were out by the woods that pressed against the rear of our house, shooting BBs at a row of empty Monster Energy cans I'd strung up with clothesline. It was a good way to relax after a rough shift of waiting tables, especially now that our old stress relief method was no longer an option. When I pointed out the 30-milligram moon dangling above us, she gave me a sour laugh of recognition. "What's so funny?" Wilkie said. He'd stopped by after work like always.